Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
We'll get to the data scientist here in a moment. Eric Eager, brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Find them online at applausetheater.com for the ultimate smart home technology, in-home theater, rocket-fast Wi-Fi. If it's technology and it's your home, it's Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Find them online at applausetheater.com. We'll get to Eric here in a second. First, I want to read you. There is a statement out by Kansas regarding Les Miles and the allegations of a quote-unquote secret settlement of a sexual harassment complaint against him. Quote, we have spoken with Coach Miles about the allegations in the story and will continue to gather information that is made available to us. KU was not, I'm stressing the not, the statement does not, but KU was not aware of these allegations when Coach Miles was hired in 2018. Dan Beckler, KU Associate Athletic Director for Public Relations, told The Star when asked for comment about the settlement, quote, this is obviously coming from the Kansas City Star, I should point out, quote, because this involves Coach Miles' former employer and predates his time at KU, and because we do not have factual knowledge about details of these allegations, it is not appropriate for us to comment further. I don't think that's a good look for Les Miles. I don't think it is ever a good idea for your boss to get blindsided with something of a negative nature regarding yourself, because now somebody's asking your boss, what the hell were you doing? Jeff Long, I have no doubt, is getting calls from the board, the chancellor, money guys perhaps. This is not a good look. I'm not saying it's the end for Les Miles. We'll talk more about this with Frank Bohl in the 4 o'clock hour. I'm not saying it's the end. I'm just saying it's not good. Right, it's not a positive, and Jeff Long has been by far the strongest ally for Les Miles. He has not wavered in one bit in his support for Les Miles. This may change that in a big, big way. Stay tuned. We'll see what ends up happening. Let's welcome our friend Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He is the data scientist. We welcome him to our T-Mobile guest line. T-Mobile, now America's fastest and largest 5G network. Eric, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, the off season, you know, it's been kind of nice to take a step back here a little bit, but there's always news, as you said just recently.
There is always. The NFL is 24/7, 365 when it comes to its value and importance in the sports world. All you need to do is look at ESPN, right? If you look at ESPN, you'd think there are there's two things going on in the world of sports. There's the only sport, football, and then there's the what I'm assuming is they missed the part that Tiger Woods is injured and not dead, because they've covered it like the man passed. In fact, I will say this. I clicked through all three news channels, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, when I was eating my lunch, all three of them, pictures of the Tiger Woods car, talking to people. One of them had Jim Gray on. One of them had somebody all talking about Tiger Woods. Listen, I'm not saying this isn't a big deal. It's a one-car crash that apparently his life was never in danger. And, you know, it was a bad crash, but it's being covered like, you know, he passed. That's not the case. Am I the only one that's like, are we really, you know, 24/7 on the car crash of Tiger Woods?
Well, and not only that, but it just seemed like, you know, they were disappointed that you know, that it was, you know, obviously the injuries, we hope he's okay. And, you know, and we hope that, you know, he can recover from it. But like, you know, it felt like they were like maybe a little disappointed in their voices that like nothing more catastrophic happened, which is obviously I think one of the issues with the sensationalization of news and, you know, why, you know, obviously sports is different, but why you guys do such a great job at 810, because, you know, you guys don't have to manufacture things. You just talk about what happens and, you know, and generally speaking that's enough for most people. Right. And I think that, you know, that unfortunately when you have 24-hour news networks, they try to fill them up with 24 hours worth of meaningful stuff. And I think that that's bred sensationalization from a lot of people.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. I think there's actually always something out there. You just got to look for it, and just taking the latest thing and making it into a bigger deal is not the way to go about doing things, but I digress. Anyway, enough about that. Maybe we'll get into that more with Frank Bull, who I hold personally responsible for where news has gone, being that he's a longtime sports director. Who better to blame than Frank Bull, right? We'll kick his ass in the next hour. Let's talk a little bit of football right now. I want to start with what is the value of a quarterback, right? Because you know, for the Chiefs, it doesn't matter. Irrelevant. They've decided it's a lot. They've given the contract. They've surrounded him with a coach that he seemingly adores. You've got a love affair between coach and quarterback. That's a wonderful thing, especially when your quarterback's really good and your head coach is really good. So that's great. It seems to be a love affair with the personnel guy. That's great. I mean, it really does look like the perfect scenario here. I mean, we know the challenges that are there with the salary cap, but they've certainly done that part of the equation right. But I'm curious when those things don't mesh and it goes wrong, as it's you know, age is making it wrong in Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger is not what he used to be, and so the contract's now a major problem. You can't just say drop back 50 times, Ben, and he'll get it done. He doesn't have that anymore within him. Deshaun Watson wants out. They've clearly got a cancerous, and I should throw in Clark Hunt and ownership at being part of that, you know, foursome, if you will, of affection for each other. That he gives them everything they need and doesn't feel a need to make himself the story, and everybody gets credit, and it's, you know, this great relationship. Houston, ownership appears to be a disaster. The quarterback wants out. And so if they ultimately finally come to their senses, which I think they have no choice but to at some point, and trade him, you know, what is the real value, right? Like, how do we – like, I remember a number of years ago I asked you, back when the cap was like $160 million, and I want to say you told me maybe it was $165 million. I said, what's the value under the cap of a great quarterback? And I thought you told me $80 million. Like if you were to quantify it in cap dollars, it was like basically 50%. Is that right? Did I have that part right?
Yeah, I think, you know, I actually wrote about this on PFF on Monday, yesterday. My opinion, I think, is a little different now. But I think it still stands for a player like Mahomes. I said it was probably about 40%.
Okay.
And the reason being is, and on PFF.com, you can go to the article. I look at the wins above replacement generated by not just quarterbacks, but quarterbacks, wide receivers, offensive linemen, and tight ends per dollar spent. And you look at that list, and it's, you know, you look at that list, and the two top teams last season were Green Bay and Tampa Bay. Two teams that spend a lot of money on their quarterback, you know, not above that threshold. And for your listeners, I want to say, you know, would you want to avoid arbitrary cutoffs? Because generally speaking, those are, you know, the reason that somebody says, no one has won a Super Bowl with a quarterback making more than X percent of the cap is that there's been a ton of them have won with a quarterback making X minus 1% of the cap, right? And so you have to be careful of that. You understand that Green Bay and Tampa Bay are a little lower per dollar than a lot of teams, but, like, you can win with a veteran quarterback on an expensive deal. You just need a guy who can elevate the play of those around him. And that's what we've seen in Green Bay. That's what we've seen in Tampa, to a lesser extent what we've seen in Seattle, and what we're going to need to see in Kansas City for the Mahomes deal. You know, they're still going to be a contender, I think, every year under Mahomes. But for them to be a contender for the Super Bowl on a regular basis, that's going to be what's required of Mahomes. And so when I think about, you know, the top guys to me should be making that much, but it's with the understanding that Patrick Mahomes can make do with wide receivers on rookie contracts and guys like Byron Pringle, which I think is generally speaking true, even if it was falsified for a game in the Super Bowl.
Right, and I agree. And so what is their value in draft picks? Because Deshaun Watson, like, I'll keep saying it until I'm blue in the face. Once a guy says he doesn't want to be there, there's no point in trying to make him be there. And unless you're going to fire the owner, I don't think you're going to make Deshaun Watson want to be there. So get your head out and recognize that it's time to move on, whether you like it or not. You know, like, this to me is just like the boyfriend that won't get it, right? She's not coming back, jackass. You can sit outside her house holding a boombox over your head, playing her favorite song all you want. She thinks you're a loser, and you're just, absolutely solidifying that thought process by not moving on. And that's how I think this is ultimately going to play out in Houston. And all Houston's going to do is get him, back him into a corner, have him sit out. When he sits out, then his value starts going down. Because once you go past that first game, what's the incentive? What's the hurry? Once everybody else has filled their quarterback spot, what's the hurry? Once everybody but one team has filled their quarterback spot, it's over, because you now have no competition to drive the market. And so every team that fills its quarterback spot diminishes the value of Deshaun Watson. There's no competition. The competition lessens, and so you've got to beat less teams for an offer. I'm curious, like, how many first-round picks, right? Because somebody said, well, what would you trade Mahomes for? I mean, I know you never would, but what would you? I said, there's no answer. Like, every first-round pick you've got for as long as Patrick Mahomes plays, like, I wouldn't do that, because you'd use every pick trying to find Patrick Mahomes. So you've already got him. So what's the point? So what is the best way to try to quantify the value of Deshaun Watson or Dak Prescott or Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger as far as draft picks go?
Well, so this is my best way of putting it. Deshaun Watson last season was worth about – this sounds absurd because they only won four games, but you know how close games are more like half a win and et cetera. So Deshaun Watson last year was worth 3.75 wins above replacement, which was third in the NFL. He had a fantastic season. Obviously that was his best season that we've seen as far as individual play. So let's say he regressed. Let's say he's worth three wins. The average number one overall pick, when you take a quarterback with that pick, is worth about four wins over the course of the rookie deal. So, and that's over four and a half, 5 years. So you're talking about, and you can look at, variance and, the time value of a draft pick. I think the league price is in about a year, about a round per year. But I think it's obviously less than that. So take that for what it's worth. But if you do that, a guy like Watson's probably worth about four. If not more.
Four first round picks, you're saying.
And if they were on a rookie deal, it'd be worth way more, right? Because as I said, one draft pick you can expect maybe four wins out of, and you're getting that many per year in many cases from the elite quarterback. The reason why Watson's a little bit, why I would drop the price at four is, for one, you can't actually trade first-round picks. That was the Chip Kelly thing. I think it's like 4 years out or longer. But the other thing is that Watson's price tag is significant. So, part of trading for him is agreeing to take the cost of paying him, which is not trivial at all.
All right, so what would be your advice to the Houston Texans right now?
None of it matters at this point for them, because their culture is so bad that, like, that Watson's really, I mean, they're basically starting over. But what I would say is I would probably, obviously if Watson doesn't want to be there, I agree with you that if you think that the situation is salvageable with Watson, I would do a full court press for the next month to try to get it to happen. If it can't happen, then I make the decision to trade him, and I trade him to the highest bidder and to an NFC team. And then what I do is I start to rebuild the thing so that it doesn't ever get to this point again. And, you know, it got to this point again on their own self-inflicted wounds, right? That's why it's so hard to say, what would you do if you were Houston? It's like, well, what would I do? You know, it's different than what Miami would do with Laremy Tunsil or, you know, what the Jets did with Jamal Adams. Like, you know, the reason some teams trade star players is because they had a run of bad luck and they're bad now and they have to rebuild and they have to tank and they have to, you know. The reason Houston is in this position is not because they had a run of bad luck. Houston's in this position on their own, by their own free will. And so it's really hard to sort of think about, you know, how Houston recovers from that.
Yeah, I'm not I feel comfortable that Houston's not going to be, you know, like they're not going to be. And it's unfair to the Glass family because the Glass family didn't have it became toxic because it was toxic for a lack of what was perceived as either trying or competence. And I think in reality, it was David Glass was trying to revolutionize how the industry worked more than he was trying to win. And after 4 or 5 years of getting his nose bloodied and bombed in Kansas City, he finally realized, I'm not changing these owners to do this the right way. And so then he brought in Dayton Moore. He was hiring Dayton Moore that got him to realize when Dayton Moore kept turning the job down by many people's account, well, we need to do this. Well, we're not going to do that because that's not what, you know, that's not what Bud Selig wants us all to do. Well, then I'm not taking the job because that's how the game's played. Well, we're going to pay in Latin America. We're not paying in Latin America. I mean, 15-year-old kids, who knows what's going to happen with that? Well, then I'm not taking the job because that's how the game's played. Like, that back and forth is what brought the Glass family into the modern age of being an owner. And then they ended up being a pretty damn good owner once they turned that corner. The Texans have to go through that kind of epiphany of, you know, valuing people, not creating a toxic environment. And that's one of the most underrated things about the Andy Reid regime here in Kansas City is he has made it crystal clear that they're going to have, and he's very Dayton Moore, you know, in this, and sometimes maybe even more apologetic, you know, going beyond and apologizing for things that shouldn't be or protecting things that shouldn't be protected of his players. But they definitely have an environment of, we love you more than any other team, so you should want to be here. And the Houston Texans are kind of like, we're rich, screw you, do what we say. And that doesn't work. And so until they fix that, they're not going to be any good, which is good for Chiefs fans because there's one team, you know, okay, now you only have 14 teams to worry about in your route to the Super Bowl because the Texans can't make enough right decisions to get there right now.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's no – I mean, this is why, you know, this was 2017, right? Cal McNair's dad was the one who said, like, we can't let the inmates run. Like, you never hear that kind of dumb stuff said by – Brett Beach or Clark Hunt or Andy Reid. Like, there's certainly a hierarchy, but like there's a, I would say, just from an outsider's view, a clear respect of what each brings to the table, and that's important, and that's been breached in Houston. And to be quite honest, Watson has been a good soldier. I don't think this makes him look bad at all, because you know, you had the situation where, you know, Bill O'Brien last year trading DeAndre Hopkins for a bag of baseballs. And then you had, you know, him getting fired 5 weeks in, and you had the McNair situation in 2017. And for the most part, he's forgiven and forgotten. And, you know, at some point, you know, you're just like, well, if I'm going to put up with this much stuff, we better win. And once they stopped winning, obviously, I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, for me, as a Chiefs fan, I just hope he doesn't go to Denver. You know, mostly not because I don't think the Chiefs can win the division when he goes to Denver, but in an AFC now where only one team gets a bye, I just want, you know, the path to the one seed to be more comfortable. If they have to split with Denver every single year, that's just going to make 14-2 really a lot harder.
Well, and it's not just the path to the easiest path to the one seed, and it's impossible to get the one seed without it, is to win your division. You have to do that first. And so I'd much rather be the Patriots than be the Steelers and Ravens splitting it up every year.
That's right, yeah, and that's the thing. And you know, luckily in the East, Buffalo is probably going to have a competent rival in Miami and possibly the Jets if they get Watson. You know, even in Kansas City, I mean, I'm not as high on Herbert as many, but, like, you know, he's shown potential enough for Chiefs fans to at least have to pay attention a little bit. You know, obviously the Chiefs will be the king of the West for a while still, but, you know, divisions could do a lot worse than having Watson, Herbert, Mahomes, and Carr as the quarterback.
All right, we'll take a break here. We're talking to Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus data scientist. He's with us on our T-Mobile guest line. We'll come back. I want to talk about is there an analytics answer to the question of when do you play the long game versus the all-in for right now approach? The Chiefs went all-in for right now last year. Is there a time when the long game is not just preferred but maybe the only choice? And are the Chiefs perhaps missing that sign right now? We'll do that with Eric Eager coming up next. He's with us here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I used to do subversive radio myself in the 70s, okay? But for this gig, we need a little more positivity, all right?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer before K-State. What was the last school to have a D2 loss and a regular season top 10 win in the same season? I thought this was a cute question until I saw everyone tweeting out the same thing I had.
Yeah, they had it. Who was it?
Stanford Steve.
Yeah, Stanford Steve had it last night. It was D2 loss and a what?
A regular season top 5 win in college basketball in the same year.
K-State didn't get a top 5, though. They got a top 7.
Top 10.
Top 10, yeah.
Can I take a shot, Petro?
No, I want to try to remember it. I just heard it last night.
That's what makes it funny.
It's not Syracuse, is it?
No, although our friend and former intern Champ lobbied that they should be given consideration, because in the 09-10 season, in addition to a number of top 10 regular season wins, they lost an exhibition to Lemoyne, a D2 team. But I said that game didn't count. It was an exhibition.
Yeah, we might have lost to Lemoyne the year we won the national championship, too.
He tells me.
But you're right. That's a game that doesn't count.
Yeah.
God, I should remember this, and for some reason I can't. I don't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jed. Steal the thunder.
Was it Wake Forest in 1994?
Yep, the 1993-94 Wake Forest Demon Deacons.
That's right. As soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, that's right. They had it last night on SportsCenter. Great Cajun food from Jazz. That's what we were playing for right there. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Go to jazzkitchen.com to see the whole menu. Great spot for Friday. Such a great, if you're a Catholic and you're observing Lent and you're not eating the meat and you want a great seafood menu, incredible seafood dishes at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Don't miss out on all those great seafood dishes. You can try one every single Friday of Lent and still have more you got to try. Of course, great Cajun food, best around at the Legends in Independence, I-70 and 291, and the original at 39th. And State Line down by the KU Med Center, taking all the precautions, doing all the cleaning. If you want to dine in, if you don't, that's fine. They're happy to bring it out to you, to your car as well. Get you some great Cajun food tonight. Go to jazzkitchen.com. Eric Eager on the T-Mobile guest line, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus. When do you play the long game, Eric? When is it about not loading up, but just being good enough to win a Super Bowl and then letting other teams' injuries or schedule or what have you push you all the way into the Super Bowl?
I think when you have a quarterback the caliber of Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, you know, obviously Peyton Manning back in the day, you know, when you're the Vegas favorite every single year to win the Super Bowl, as the Chiefs have been for the last 2 years, I think playing the long game, it invites more variance than we think it does, right? So I had no problem with the Chiefs going all in this year. I don't even think they really went all in the way they structured the deals. Like, as we talked about last week, like, you can get out from under. Obviously, you do push some of the bills back a few years at times, but – you know, the issue obviously becomes, like, you just never know when Travis Kelce is going to fall off. You never know when Tyreek Hill is going to fall off. You never know, you know, if Patrick Mahomes will have, you know, I think of like Peyton Manning's season in 2001, the one where Jim Mora yelled playoffs and got fired. You never know when Mahomes will have a bad year. You know, he rarely has bad games, let alone bad years. But, you know, so with him, I think you really never do want to, like, just hit the reset button and you know, play for 2 years from now. Because you're always with him, like you said, a couple bad breaks from other teams away from being emerging as the best team, just like in 2019. And we're all sitting here saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense. They're a great football team, and all we did was pay attention to Baltimore for 3 months. And we maybe should have paid more attention to the Chiefs, et cetera, et cetera. I think when you're a little bit lower, so, you know, let's say you're a team with a quarterback who's good but not great. Let's say Atlanta, you know, Dallas with Dak, you know, Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, those types of teams, I think you do have to evaluate those situations more integral. You have to realize that, like, you're never going to have the best chance to win in any given season, and you're going to need to pile up some really good bets and parlay them together in a season or two to really have a shot. And you know, the Chiefs will never be in that situation with Mahomes. But I do agree that it's an interesting talking point for some of these lower tier teams that are right beneath the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I can see if you wanted to say, look, like you said, second tier quarterback, we've got to load up. We're close. Let's load up. This is our best shot. And I can also see franchises that are like the Lions. They need to get to a Super Bowl. They need to get that. Like the Chiefs, 50 years. They needed it, and the Lamar Hunt Trophy never being in their building. I would have no problem with teams that have been through that kind of drought saying, we've got to go all in. We have to go all in. But now I think the most important thing is for the Chiefs to play the long game, and that is to never overextend on any 1 year at the cost of future years. And I think there's just too many bargains out there, and when you're up against the cap, generally speaking, wherever you've overspent to put yourself up against the cap, it's not worth not being able to grab the values that are available each year, because there are some great values. And when you've only got $4 million worth of cap, you can't go get it, because you've got to leave that open for when somebody goes down and you know and gets IR'd and you got to sign a player. You got to have, what, on average 10 league minimum contracts, you know, which is, you know, $3.5 to $10 million, depending upon if you're at the, well, it's what, $7 to $10 million. Just for signing guys to league minimums when other guys go on the IR, you need to have that, because every year guys go down. So when you go into a year, you're like, well, they're $5 million under. Not really, because we know there's going to be attrition. So to really be under the cap, you need to be running. You know, I looked at it there a number of years ago. The Patriots were consistently running 10% below the cap. That was kind of their sweet spot. They'd spend 90% of the cap. They had 10% available. And then if a Randy Moss or a Junior Seau or whoever, be it an older veteran towards the end of their career but still can bring something to the table, or just a guy that, you know, has worn out his welcome, Randy Moss with the Raiders, they're in position to where they can bring him on. And I think that's, you know, you don't have to have the perfect completed team, because other teams will screw things up and allow you to complete it on the fly, either on cutdown day or somewhere during the season before, or even after the trade deadline. The trade deadline, you know, GMs are a lot friskier now and a lot more willing to do things now. So that's a potential place where a guy where they finally say, okay, that's it, I'm out. And or just the guy who gets cut for whatever reason and becomes available. You know, I mean, the Bucks made two really big pickups this year. They picked up Antonio Brown, who may not be the number one receiver in football anymore, but he was sure as hell productive and seemed to be Brady's number one option when he was out there. And they picked up, you know, your buddy, Fat Lenny, Leonard Fournette.
Mm-hmm.
And both those guys played a big role. Both of them had touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. And they had the opportunity to pounce on those players, because, I mean, one of the things that Tampa does really well is, until relatively recently, they've never given out signing bonuses to players. You know, and that, you know, it obviously, you know, hurts at times, but it helps you in the sense that you're almost never paying for yesterday's season with today's money. And, you know, that helps them have the cash on hand to sort of, you know, to get things right.
Now the question is, can Brett Veach shift gears and do that?
Yeah, and do you get the impression that's kind of his mentality, or do you kind of I get the feeling that for better or worse he likes to gamble, you know, he likes to put his chips in the middle of the table and kind of like ask questions later.
So here's my fear. You know, we keep talking about how young he is. I think he's 40 now, isn't he? Has he turned 40, Curtis? Look that up if you would for me. How old Brett Veach is now, which in GM terms is very young. It's a job that you usually don't get until your 50s. It
43.
Generally requires how old?
43. Turned 43 last December.
Okay. All right. So 43. He's an old fart. Let's quit talking about how young this guy is. No, he just looks really young. But so he's 43. So he's got a little more experience than maybe some people, you know, or we have even given him credit for. I was thinking he was even younger than that. But not by much. I do think there's something to be said for having been either the guy who got burnt or being a top lieutenant for someone who got burnt. Now, maybe Brett Veach got burnt in the Tamba Hali second contract. Maybe Brett, you know, being in the room with John Dorsey, like things that I think John Dorsey did wrong. To this day, I've got a vague idea of why John Dorsey's not here. I can't give you this started him down that path. This sped him up down that path, and this was the final straw. I can't give you that yet. I hope one day to be able to get it, but it's been harder than I thought it would be this far afterwards to find out. So I'm optimistic because I think your point's a good one about Veach. Like, what kind of card player is he? Is he bluff, 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 bluff because it's never blown up in his face? Like, those are dangerous guys. Like, you make poker analogies. You sit down with a guy that will rock and fire. There was a guy, Tom Dwan, right, for poker players that are out there. I forget what his nickname was, but when they used to have where the guys would play with their own money, it was like a super high-stakes game, and they would play with their own money, and it was on TV. This guy was like 21, 22 years old, and he sat down with the Doyle Brunsons and Phil Hellmuth and the guys that had been around for a while that had millions and millions of dollars. And this guy would, I mean, he would bluff his balls off, okay? But then somebody would be like, okay, he always bluffs, and they'd call him, and then he was sitting there holding the nuts.
You're talking about Durr.
Yeah, Durr, that's what it was, Durr.
With four R's. D-U-R-R-R-R.
Yes, Tom Dwan, Durr. Nowadays, now, of course, those kind of games aren't really on TV as much anymore. But I don't really – and I talked to some of the guys I know. I actually, am fortunate enough to call a couple of guys that are professional poker players' friends. And I said, what happened to him? And they're like, yeah, you know, he got on TV when he was, you know, like card hot, right? Like everything worked out for him, and everyone thought he was just this genius. Well, he kept doing that, and it blew up on him, and he got busted. He went broke, which a lot of those guys will. I mean, they're action junkies, most of them. And they said it blew up in his face. That's why you don't really see him around anymore. And now he's looking for guys to stake him and get him into games. All right, what's the point of it? Like, you can be super aggressive and just be kind of on a roll. But eventually you got to play the whole game. And so is that what Brett Veach is? Is he Tom Dwan, that he's played the super aggressive? And the biggest one, he got the biggest hand right. You know, he got a $100 million hand right. And he may have, splashed off $2 million at a time 10 times and lost $20 million. But he got the $100 million bet right and put that $100 million in the bank. And so he's still $80 million to the good because he got the Patrick Mahomes decision right. Right? To put that into poker terms. I think it's a wonderful thing that you bring up. I am optimistic, though, that he was around for the Justin Houston contract, the Eric Berry contract, and that he understands, you know, you don't want to be buried under this, under all these contracts, and we do need to get out from under. Even more so, I'm quite optimistic, Eric, and I said this to Coach Reed. I said, listen, I cover this in his one little bitty time, the last time we'll talk to him until we get to minicamp, the one press conference he did the Monday after the Super Bowl. The one question I got to ask him was, I said, Coach, I covered the Chiefs when they used to sit and say, we got to be more like the Eagles, your Eagles. And the Eagles, they might get out from under a guy a year early, but they never get out from under a guy a year late. I said, you have decisions to make. The cap, age, do you still have that same mindset that, hey, it's better to be a year early getting out from under a guy than being a year late? And, you know, he said, look, there are difficult decisions that have to be made. At the end of the day, this is a business. And there are tough decisions that have to be made, and we will make them when they're necessary. And I took that to mean, like, yeah, I'll cut Eric Fisher. I'll cut Mitchell Schwartz. And to me, I think that's what it is. I hear everybody, you know, outside, you know, personnel departments say, well, you can't cut Schwartz. Like, they don't know who you're going to start. So that, if you cut those guys, so they immediately come to the conclusion that you can't cut them. And Andy Reid, I think, understands that if you don't think they're going to be able to play, you can't afford to keep them. That's the worst alternative is giving them money and having them not on the field. And so I'm optimistic that he's been the king of the long game. And in reality, what he did was he changed his poker playing and went all in, you know, in 18, 19, 20, because he'd always played the long game and that he's a veteran of the long game. And that he will make sure Brett Veach, even if Veach doesn't want to play the long game, that Andy Reid's done it for years, and he'll show him how to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I don't pretend to know what the dynamics are, but like I do think that if you guessed that Reid controls most of what's going on, you'd be more right than wrong, right? So, right. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about Veach, and I think obviously he's an important cog, but it is that combination of those two guys. I just think from the perspective of the draft, you know, he's never traded down. He used a draft pick from this season, 2021, to pick a guy in the sixth or seventh round this past year. You know, there are markers of a guy who, you know, just kind of doesn't, you know, who is more of a, you know, like you said, a player that kind of pushes his cards in more often than not. So that's always something that, I think we have to be aware of when, you know, we love this team and we want to make sure that they do well, but they have to be themselves at some level. And so to me, I think obviously Reid is one way and Veach is the other. And we got to, you know, be cognizant of the fact that Veach is going to behave that way at times.
Yeah, I don't know that Reed's the other way. I don't know that he's been the other way the last few years in Kansas City. I think when he got Mahomes in, he went, I got my weapon. Even that year that he was sitting out, just watching him in practice, he went, all right, I got the guy. And he said, we got 3 years, whatever it takes. And that's 19, 20, and 20, or 18, 19, or maybe 4 years, 18, 19, 20, and 21. That those are our 4 years. And so we may live through an all or nothing year in 21, but I believe that after that he'll have no choice but to shift gears and, you know, play the long game. I do think that's coming. I do know it's within Andy Reid, and I think if Andy Reid's in the room with Brett Veach, I'd like to think that Brett Veach got enough scarring from any mistakes that happened in the Dorsey era and the mistakes that happened in Philadelphia at the end with Andy Reid that he knows that it can go wrong, right? That they're not infallible. Mm-hmm. And everybody got reminded of that with the way it went in the Super Bowl, that 15 doesn't – he can't fix it all. He can fix a lot of it. Andy Reid can fix a lot of it, but they can't fix all of it. So I'm optimistic they'll make good decisions. I will take a break more with the data scientist Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He's brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. You can find him online at applausetheater.com. Almost 20 years in business. It doesn't matter whether you're building new, renovating, or if your home is already done. If you want the most cutting-edge technology, smart home technology, in-home theaters, rocket-fast Wi-Fi in and outside your house, Applause Custom Sight and Sound is the only company you need to know. Find them online at applausetheater.com.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I never thought I'd be engaged with somebody who threw balls for a living. Yeah, when I grew up, I'm going to marry someone who He throws balls. Yeah.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You listen to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Eric Eager, data scientist, with us here in the program as we talk some Chiefs football, talking about where they're going to go during this offseason. Mitchell Schwartz tweeted out today a photo of him with the mask and the cap and the gown. Said, injury update, I'm getting surgery. Hang on, of course, seven different reminders of things that I'm going to just snooze for the 58th day in a row just came up, blocking my view of this, so I apologize. Injury update. I'm getting surgery today. I was hoping to recover enough to get back for playoff Super Bowl, but that didn't happen. It's time to address the issue. The recovery process isn't too long, which is nice. Looking forward to a healthy 2021. I'm of the opinion you're in the get it right business. That's, you know, every part of it. Can we at least say, maybe I'll get Bob Glauber's thoughts on this. Can we at least say that there may have been no way of knowing he wouldn't be back, but like if he needs to be back and ready to go for training camp, or they made a real mistake to not be able to not get whatever surgery was done. Like, I would be very frustrated if I'm Brett Veach and Andy Reid with my medical team, if Mitchell Schwartz said, I'm not getting surgery, and the doctor was saying, you need the surgery. If this now goes into next year and he's just getting surgery at almost, you know, at the very last days of February, that now, you know, if this drags into next year, this was a big, giant medical mistake.
Yeah, and they've had these before, right? Like, the Eric Berry thing was an issue for a full season. You know, Justin Houston, like, they hadn't, you know, players recovering from, relatively routine injuries has not necessarily been the thing the Chiefs are best at.
Right, and so I do want to be clear, since you brought up Eric Berry, I believe that the Chiefs wanted him to get surgery and he didn't want to do it. And so then you got to decide, are we going to cut this super popular guy because he's not doing what we think he needs to do? And it also gets difficult because he goes, well, I've got an injured Achilles. I'm getting surgery. I'm injured. And then you're on an injury settlement. It's not as easy as we might make it sound here. I do want to be clear, in defense of all general managers and organizations, you know, releasing a guy that's hurt is not easy. Okay. But like, it is a thing where you've got to build a trust. It's why you've got to have a great medical team, and the players have got to trust your medical team so that you can always make the right decision, the right big picture decision, one for their career, but also for the timeline to maximize their ability to be on the field.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes what's best for the team isn't necessarily what the player thinks, and that's the tricky one, right? I mean, even Tom Bahali was another one where, you know, coming back wasn't necessarily the most straightforward thing. And, you know, those are frustrating, but yeah, I mean, the proof will be in the pudding here. If he's back in week one, hopefully, you know, that will solidify and help, you know, the possible loss of Eric Fisher. But if he's not, like, things get a little bit dicey up front there. And in my estimation, they have to, they have to pretend as though him coming back is less than 100% proposition.
Wait a minute, state that last part again.
Like, they can't go into the draft and free agency with the assumption that it's a lock that he's going to be back.
Schwartz, you mean, not Schwartz and Fisher?
Yeah, Schwartz, yeah.
I agree. You get the, hey, what percentage of the time does a guy come back at what percent? Well, 90% of the time, they come back at about 90%. You know, worst case scenario is they need another surgery. That would take him out all of the next year. But that only happens about 2% of the time. You know, like, that's the information you got to have. And then what's the guy's, how much, you know, has he been a diligent guy? Clearly he has. So we should expect, for whatever the best case scenarios are, Mitchell Schwartz has a higher probability of reaching the best case scenario than some other players that are maybe slackers. And you know, so I think I am glad. I think it's good news. He's talking about next year. And if Schwartz is back, it gets easier – to maybe say, okay, we'll bring Fisher back, and we've got Yang, and hopefully we find a tackle in the first couple of rounds? Or is it exactly the opposite? We've got Schwartz, now it gets easier to walk on Fisher.
Right, and take a tackle in the number, you know, with your number one pick at 31. That's where I would see, and I do think they're going to have an opportunity to take a player who ends up being halfway decent there.
How committed would you be to that? Because that's drafting need. All right, and this is, the good news is your need matches up with where the depth of this draft is. But if there's a run on tackles, and if you go in like you know, here you are shaming Brett Veach for always trading up the way you love to do, Eric. I'm kidding. but we're talking about his proclivity to trade up. But if you send him into a year where it's like, send him into a draft where it's like, you got to get a tackle, and if six of them pop off, or four or five of them, wherever your line is of, this is it, it's got to be one of these guys, if they pop off and he's sitting there and it's like, wait a minute, we've had five tackles go in the first 16 picks, I got to get to 18 to get one of these guys, then you can't be pissed at him for doing that.
I don't think it gets that. You know, there's obviously the opportunity then, if a tackle's not available to them, then they'll have somebody like Rashad Bateman, Rondell Moore, Elijah Moore, somebody like that at the wide receiver position, which will certainly help them. I'm not firm on the tackle spot, but I do think it's the most likely possibility for them at 31. Kadarius Toney, even somebody like that at the wide receiver position, to really help them, you know, after Hill and after Kelsey.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see who slides. You know, I like the idea of trading down from 31 and planning on either wideouts or tackles sliding and being able to get somebody really good there and get extra picks to throw at it. But, you know, that's us. We're trade down guys.
Yep.
That's what we like to do. Eric, great stuff as always, buddy. Always love talking football with you. You're the best. Encourage everybody to go check out the PFF forecast, Eric, and George Sharuri's great podcast, and read all their work. We will talk to you again soon, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Saran. You're the best, and enjoy the warmth that we have here.
End of the hour question on the Half Shell, sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, before 2020, what was the last full NFL season in which there were no 9-7 teams? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.